Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us today. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
First and goal from the 4. Handoff McKinnon. Runs through the middle of the line. Touchdown, Vikings! And like that, they open a 23-10 lead.
Paul Allen with the call on KFAN in Minneapolis last night as Jerick McKinnon scored from 3 yards out. They actually quick-snapped at that time, caught the Giants flat-footed. And that is our play-by-play call of the day. All right. Great to have you with us. Mr. Buhner's on hand. We're open lines for the next hour. Baseball playoffs, by the way, start tonight. The Orioles with Tillman on the mound. Stroman will be on the mound tonight for Toronto at that 4.3 or 4 ERA.
Yeah, it's a little on the high side.
A little.
Being kind.
9-10 on the year, and Tillman's the best starter they have. Now, you do set up your playoff roster a bit different because you're allowed to do it each round. So tonight's considered a round. So because it's a one-game playoff and not a series, for example, the Mets are going to have 16 hitters and 9 pitchers. Now, and the winner of these games, they're all going to be about the same. Look, I'm going to make sure I have 2 starters, one that starts the game, and one in case something happens. So I've got another guy that's used to starting, and then 7 relievers. And then I'm going to have 16 hitters, which means I can pinch hit, I can pinch run, I can, you know, put defensive players, whatever, for the one-game playoff. When they get to the next round and it's multiple games, they'll be set up differently. They'll have more pitchers probably than hitters. It'll probably be 13 pitchers, 12 hitters, or maybe it'll be 13 hitters and 12 pitchers. But it'll be almost a 1-to-1 ratio. I can't be pure 1-to-1 because of 25 guys, but almost 1-to-1. So each round you're allowed to set it up the way you need it. Well, this is a round. So tonight for the one-game playoff and tomorrow for the one-game playoff between the Mets and the Giants, you're allowed to set it up in a way to win it. And, for example, the Mets are going to go with 16 hitters, 9 pitchers. I would guess that everybody's going to do the same thing. So
makes good sense because it's one and done for this one.
Yeah, no, it's one and done, and that's why you do it that way.
I would imagine that Toronto manager is going to have a very short hook on his starter if he gets into any kind of trouble, go to the bullpen and...
Well, I think you manage this. I've always felt you manage differently in the playoffs than you do in the regular season. I think your patience is shorter at this particular time than it is in the regular season. That instead of letting somebody fight through it, maybe give you some innings. Because, again, you're not just managing in the regular season the game. You are managing the season. So I may lay somebody out there and let them go 5-6 innings, even though they struggled in the first couple, because, I mean, I don't want to blow my bullpen out because I might need it tomorrow night. I might need it the night after, something. So you're always not just managing the game. You're managing the season. Well, now it's different. Now, tonight, you are managing the game and the season all at once. So since you're managing the game and the season all at once, you manage the game differently. Your patience is thinner. They get the hook quicker. I can't afford to go deep. You make mistakes. You're out. You don't. You stay. Same thing in a series. You know, you don't really sacrifice. Only once in a while do you sacrifice somebody. And one of the times I can remember where it really benefited sacrificing somebody was when the Red Sox made that great 4-0 comeback against the Yankees. In Game 3, they were blown out by the Yankees 19-8. And Tim Wakeman, the knuckleballer, went to Terry Francona and said, "Tito, look," he says, "just give me the ball, I'll just pitch innings." And what he did was, I don't know how many he pitched, but I mean, look, they got blown out. And he ate innings, right, and saved the entire bullpen so that they were all available for games 4 and 5.
Brilliant strategy. That was what, 2004?
2004. But that was one of the keys to that series, was him taking the ball and saying, "Don't bring anybody else in, I'll finish the game." And they lost 19-8, and they didn't bring anybody else in. He didn't start. He came out of the bullpen. But he ate innings at the end so that they didn't waste innings on guys they might need later. Well, they needed him later, especially in Game 5, they needed him in Game 4 and 5. They needed the bullpen in both. He doesn't do that. Those guys aren't available. They don't win. And so sometimes you can do that. But if the games are tight, your patience is different. Same thing in a short series. You don't waste any time because in this case, you're not just managing the series, okay? And you're not managing the season. You're managing the series and the season all at once. So if somebody's got to go, they got to go.
And, Steve, on the opposite side, on the offensive side of the ball, wouldn't it be fair to say you're going to see more pinch hitters, more pinch runners, et cetera, to get that one run you need to win?
Late in the game, you will. Yes. You'll see more so of the pinch hitter, obviously, in the National League. You won't see in the American League. For example, tonight, Edwin Encarnacion. I mean, who are you going to pull him for?
You're right. Sure.
I want that bat in there the entire time. When David Ortiz is in the lineup against the Cleveland Indians, I can guarantee you, unless he's the winning run in the ninth inning, they aren't pinch running for him. All right, or the tying run, they're not going to, because you can manage that differently. You have to be, and I've always maintained this, you have to be a better starting pitcher in the American League than you do in the National League.
Sure.
I mean, common sense tells you that. The reason it tells you that is simple. I've got to face 1 through 9. There are no breaks in the American League lineup. In the National League, I really have to worry about 7 guys. I don't really. I can pitch around the 8th guy if I need to get to the 9th guy. I mean, because it's the pitcher. I mean, the American League is a tougher league to pitch in than the National League is.
And you
much
can
tougher.
Yep, and you can also put that designated hitter up and down the lineup and readjust things there as well.
Right. Oh, exactly. I mean, pitch count. You know, I mean, you realize the American League is the reason we have pitch counts, because there was no way to gauge how far to send a starter in a game until pitch counts really came into vogue as to what to do, because in the National League, you're often pitch inning for so many guys, they don't really get to a pitch count that's of significance. American League, it does come into play. I mean, that's where it comes in. But I just think that it'll be two interesting series. I think Baltimore, Tillman on the mound gives Baltimore the advantage tonight. And that Baltimore played great down the stretch. But you know what? Stretch runs don't mean anything. They don't mean, I mean, you look back at the history of this thing. Stretch runs don't mean a lot. And the best team does, you know, there are no great teams anymore in any sport. The Penguins won the Stanley Cup. They're really good. Are they a great team, a team for the ages? No, but they're the team that survived the playoff and won. Are the Cleveland Cavaliers a team for the ages, one of the best teams of all time? No, they're really, really good. And they survived the playoff, and they were able to get revenge against Golden State. Are the Kansas City Royals a team for the ages, going back-to-back World Series and winning the second one? No, but they're really, really good. And you know, in the Super Bowl, are the Denver Broncos a team for the ages? No. We don't really have teams for the ages anymore. We have now survivors who are really, really good teams. There are no great teams really anymore, great teams, because you know, the circumstances are so different. The playoffs are so long now. And, you know, you end up surviving or hitting a play when you need it, or they don't make a play when they have to make it. It's just, it becomes, you know, more of which team survived, which really good team survived. Well, in the past year, the really good teams that have survived have been Kansas City, Denver, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland. Those are the ones that survived. And they're all really, really good. None of them are great. And it's the same story with this baseball playoff. Who's great? Some people may say the Cubs are. I think the Cubs are really, really good. Really, really good. But I think if they win it, they will have deserved it. But at the same time, among the pantheon of great teams, no.
No,
but all you have to do is be the best team in the moment.
Yeah. No one's yelling break up the Cubs yet, that's for sure.
No, they aren't. And, I mean, Texas is really good. I think the Red Sox are really good. Cleveland's really good. You know, the two wild cards. I mean, we had a World Series 2 years ago where it was two wild card teams, Kansas City and San Francisco. So, you know, who knows? I mean, there are no great teams anymore.
Steve, when you think about, like, the great Miami Dolphins when they went undefeated, they played just 17 games.
Yeah, total. Yep.
And now what, you can play maximum, what, 21 now? At least 20.
20 would be the max.
Okay.
If you end up being a wild card team or having to play the wild card game. Yeah.
Yeah, you could end up with 20 games as opposed to 17. And those extra games do take their toll.
Now, the difference, though, is that when the Dolphins played and went 17-0, they didn't have home field advantage in the playoffs. They rotated who had the home games. That's why the Dolphins, if you notice, when they beat the Steelers to get to the Super Bowl, the game was played in Pittsburgh.
Yes, it was.
All right, it was not played in Miami, even though the Dolphins at that point were 15-0. I think the Dolphins, I want to say, beat Cleveland in the first round or something like that. And that was at home. And then they played the Steelers for the AFC Championship in Pittsburgh. That's the one time I ever have ever heard Jack Ham lament something. When Larry Seipel ran that fake punt, I think he ran it like 70 yards or something like that, turned the whole game around.
Yep.
And to this day, he still laments that play happening.
I can understand that completely. There was a lot of crying all over Pittsburgh that year, that day.
That was the week after, I think it was the week after the Immaculate Reception.
Yeah.
So
was that 1974 or thereabouts, somewhere in there? Maybe not.
72, maybe? 72. 73. Okay. So 73 Dolphins.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So, and they beat the Redskins in the Super Bowl. All right. We will come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. I know, obviously, we talk a lot about football on the show, and justifiably so. But I want to slip in this one thing before we keep moving, and that is, obviously, one of the great Pennsylvania sports icons, who was a world icon, Arnold Palmer. His funeral was actually a private funeral last Thursday. And today was the memorial service at St. Vincent College in Latrobe, and as expected, Jack Nicklaus was one of the speakers.
Steve, one of the other ones was... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I remember when I first saw Arnold hit a golf ball. I was 14 years old, playing in the highest state amateur at Sylvania Country Club in Toledo. I was on the golf course. It had been pouring down rain all day. And I came in off the golf course. I was the only one on the golf course. I walked by the practice range. There was only one person on the practice range. And I stopped and I looked at him. He looked like Popeye. He was hitting these short irons, but he was drilling them about 8 feet high. And they looked like they're just running right through the rain. And I sat there and looked at it, and I watched him for about 30 minutes. And I didn't know him. He didn't know me. I walked into the clubhouse, and I said, who in the world is that guy on the practice tee out there hitting balls like Popeye? He said, oh, that's our defending champion, Arnold Palmer. Well, that's an Arnold Palmer I will never forget. He was an everyday man, everyone's hero. Aunt Arnold managed to remove the eye from Icon and instead let the world share in his greatness.
Jack Nicklaus today in Latrobe.
Steve, one of the people that was scheduled to speak was Annika Sorenstrom. I thought that was a very interesting choice made by the family.
It was made by the family because one of her children was born at the Winnie Palmer Children's Center. And the two of them became very close because the child was put into the neonatal intensive care unit. And she strongly felt that that hospital saved that child's life. And she developed a tremendous connection to Arnold Palmer because I guess Arnold Palmer found out about it and went to the hospital every day to see her and to make sure the baby was okay. And so because of that, they became very close.
Yeah, not surprising that Arnold Palmer would do that. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Steve, but Arnie's brother-in-law is a Danville fellow named Marty Walzer. It would be Marty's sister, Winnie, who was married to Arnold for almost 50 years. And Marty has a son, Chris, who worked for Arnold Palmer Enterprises, helping with the design of golf courses and things like that. And Marty owned the Pine Barn Inn in Danville for many years. And Arnie was a frequent guest in Danville and at Frosty Valley Country Club and certainly at the Pine Barn Inn. And came in very quietly, unassumingly, as one would expect of him, and with no fanfare, and was actually a beloved guest at Frosty Valley in the Pine Barn Inn.
Well, but he was a beloved guest everywhere because he had the ability. I was only around him a couple times, all right, which I always consider to be personally a privilege, but I was only around him a couple times. And he made, you knew he was Arnold Palmer, but he made you feel like he was one of the guys. You know what I mean? In other words, you know, I golf, you do this. I mean, he had a great sense of humor. He had the ability to take that knife and just turn that little turn in the back, just to make it hurt a little bit. Because he had that stinging sense of humor that was a riot. But at the same time, that was just him just being one of the guys. And that takes a real life skill to be like that, where you have to remind yourself that of who he is, and I'll be honest with you, just so everyone knows that on a personal level, I would always have to every once in a while remind myself around Joe Paterno that, you know, you just remember that's Joe Paterno.
Yeah.
Because I was treated in such a way where he could kid me, I could kid him, or get serious or not get serious, and to the point where he made you feel like he was one of the guys. And I think a lot of people wouldn't think of Joe as being like that, but he was like that.
Well, there's another guy that you know that grew up in Western Pennsylvania that's a lot like Arnold Palmer, and that's Jack Hamm.
Jack's completely like that. Jack has no ego at all. Did I ever tell you the story about the autographs? Yeah, every single commercial break, we have people will come up and they want Jack to sign something, sign a card, sign a ball, sign a jersey, something. And there's usually a decent little line over there. As a couple of years ago, we got to one of the commercial breaks and we looked over and there was nobody there. And Jack says, I think they finally have forgotten me. And I looked over at him. I said, I don't know how many. I said, after 15, 16 years, Jack, don't you think you got everybody?
Well, Arnold Palmer, a loyal son of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. There were governors there. I'm sure there were groundskeepers there as well today to pay tribute to him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. PGA professionals, icons of golf. I guess the number of private planes at Arnold Palmer La Trobe Airport. And by the way, Arnie's plane was in the air today. They flew it.
Yes.
And they kept dipping the wing.
And the Ryder Cup showed up as well.
Ricky Fowler brought the Ryder Cup, and yes, Phil Mickelson was there. So
says a lot about Arnold Palmer, doesn't it?
Sure does. But you know what? Think about this. In this great state of Pennsylvania, you look at the roots of Jack Ham from Johnstown and Arnold Palmer from La Trobe. Everybody has that common man touch.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, keywords 11 and 15 in Humble's Wharf. I'm going to change up this segment here because usually we do the sports bozo of the day. I don't want to do that today. What I want to do here is, since the memorial service was for Arnold Palmer today, and of course he had a connection to Danville and was a not only a great world and U.S. and golfing icon, but a great Pennsylvania icon. This is his grandson, Sam Saunders, professional player himself, speaking about his grandfather today at St. Vincent College in La Trobe.
My memories of him as a grandfather, our family's memories, are here in La Trobe. Whether it was our summers here or the times we were here for Christmas. And it wasn't watching him win golf tournaments. It was watching him sled ride down the hills with us. It was seeing him swimming on his back in the pool outside of the house that my mom and her sister grew up in. Those are the memories that we got to see. But we all had the opportunity to see Arnold Palmer, the legend, the golfer, the style that he carried himself with. You all are used to seeing him in his stiff collared shirts with the umbrella pin, wearing it with a style that only he could. We have the unique opportunity to see him in cut-off sweatpants and a t-shirt sometimes. And we love that man as much as you loved the man that you saw on TV. There wasn't a big difference between the man you saw on TV and the man that we knew at home. He was so special in that right. I want to tell you a couple of stories from me personally of why he meant so much to me. I could talk about my golf career and how he helped me get started in that and all of the great advice he's given me, but what he did so well with me is he was always there. He was there for me, but he was there for our entire family. He would always take my phone call. Always. In fact, I called him one day, and he would always answer the phone, and in his voice, "Where are you?" That was how he answered the phone every time. And I was always at a tournament somewhere. I said, "Oh, I'm here. Or he'd say, "Why aren't you playing?" And I said, "I am playing. I'm in Boise playing in the web.com event, or I'm, you know, wherever." And this one particular time, he said, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm at home." And I said, "Where are you?" He said, "I'm with the president." So I said, "What do you, the president of what?" And he said to me, as if it was so obvious, "The United States." He said, "I'm in the Oval Office right now with the president." And I said, "Well, why are you answering your phone?" He said, "I wanted to talk to you." And that's what he did. He always wanted to talk to me. He always wanted to be there for us. And he always, always was. The next phone call I want to tell you about is a little bit tougher. It's the last phone call that I ever made to him. I will be grateful for the rest of my life that I called him at 4:10 on the Sunday that he passed away. I called him. He answered the phone on the first ring in the hospital, preparing for surgery the next morning. He asked me where I was. Where are you? I said, I'm at home. I said, I'm thinking about you today. We all are. And he told me to take care of my babies, take care of my children, take care of my family, my entire family. And I intend to do that and make him proud. And then I told him I loved him. He told me he loved me back. And that was the last thing we said to each other, and I will cherish that for the rest of my life. And at this point, I'm going to take one of the best pieces of advice he ever gave me. And that was to talk less and listen more. I'm proud to be here today. I'm humbled by each and every one of you here. My entire family is humbled to have you here today. And we thank you, and we will do our best to make him proud and make you all proud to ensure that the name Arnold Palmer lives on forever and that Dumpy will always be with us. Thank you.
And if you're wondering why he referred to him as Dumpy, his sister could not say Grampy. She couldn't say a GR. And because of that, she referred to him as Dumpy. Well, then they all started referring to him as the grandchildren as Dumpy. And Sam Saunders said on his phone, it says Dumpy on it. He says he will never remove that number from his phone. Only the words that either a son, a daughter, a grandson, or a granddaughter can say, Sam Saunders said today about his grandfather, Arnold Palmer. So there's the professional side, there's the commercial side, there's the pilot side, but there's the personal side. And the personal side is what Sam Saunders brought out today, talking about his grandfather and what he meant to him today. So just thought, you know, and you know, just wanted to change the segment around a little bit because this is someone that in this state was incredibly revered. Not just in this state, but around the world. And give him all the credit in the world for what he accomplished. Well, I mean, his net worth, I think, was something like $675 million. Somebody wrote, said somewhere. I don't know.
He had a lot of investments in hotels, golf clubs, different things.
I think he made an investment here in one of the villages here near Penn State. I think he actually had an investment here in State College.
He was the first. He helped found the IMG Management Group for athletes, among other things, and was its first client.
Mark McCormick was the guy at IMG. Very important to him.
So and he had was it the Golf Channel he was part of?
Yes. He was the co-founder of the Golf Channel.
I mean, this is a guy that just not only could he hit a golf ball, but he could also had the foresight to see things like professional management of athletes, of televising events with a dedicated channel. Holy cow.
Right. No, you have to have, look, in order to do the great people along the way that you cross paths with are people who have great vision. They see the big picture. Now, not all of them work, but they also are ones that don't quit trying along the way because they are people of vision. And when organizations get in trouble, are organizations that lose sight of the big picture, don't have vision, and are trying to do things day by day and week by week. And you can't do things day by day, week by week, if you're really going to have long-term success. Arnold Palmer was one of those people that could see the big picture, and thus he invested in things that he thought had a future to them. That, look, we'll take a loss early on. In the end, I think it's going to succeed. Golf Channel's a perfect example. You know, you start out, you take a loss, and then you end up making money. You know, Big Ten Network was the same way. The first year, no Comcast, no Time Warner. They still rolled it out there. They took a loss, a big loss. And then when they finally convinced Comcast and Time Warner to come on board, it then became an incredibly profitable adventure for all the Big Ten schools. So you've got to take some chances once in a while to have long-term success. Do they all work? No, they don't all work. Are you not a successful business person if a couple don't work? No, it just means a couple didn't work. Edison had a great saying when they asked him about all the times he tried to invent the light bulb. I think it was over 100 times he tried to invent one. And they said, what were the keys to your failures that led you to invent the light bulb? And he said, they weren't failures. It just showed me 100 different ways not to do it.
Good point. I think it's clear to say that Arnold Palmer was a dreamer.
You know, he got it early. In other words, he loved being a pilot, for example. So he wanted to be a pilot. He loved flying. So he becomes a pilot. Well, being a pilot, then guess what it allows him to do? It allows him to fly to tournaments. It allows him to fly home and spend more time at home. It allowed him to be around his kids more, his grandchildren more. All these residual, just because he thought, you know what? If I fly, it's really going to benefit me as the player, but it's going to benefit me as the man and the family man. So he flew.
Yeah.
And he flew the plane himself.
Yeah, and now all the PGA pros at the top level have their own pilots and planes. The NASCAR drivers do, but he was like the first guy to go, hey, I think I'll go back to La Trobe, get in the plane and go.
But you know what? But that last part is what you said is the key. He always went back to La Trobe.
Yeah.
He had a home in Orlando, which for some odd reason in this wintertime he seemed to want to go there as opposed to La Trobe.
Yeah.
But he always came back to La Trobe. And this is when I knew that he was, you know, we saw at the Masters he didn't look well and he wasn't well enough to hit a shot. But he gave the thumbs up to Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player. And when I knew he was really sick was when I was at the U.S. Open. Because he and Jack Nicklaus were to be the honorary chairs of the event. And only Jack Nicklaus could show up. And for Arnold Palmer, the trip to Pittsburgh is what, 35 minutes?
Oh.
40 minutes max?
To the U.S. Open site?
40 minutes?
Yeah, it's just about that at most.
Yeah. And he couldn't make it.
Yeah.
And that's, I remember being in the media tent and several of us were talking. They said, he must really be ill.
No question. And, you know, the setting today for his service was St. Vincent College in La Trobe. And I've been there many times throughout my college career at Westminster College and La Trobe are in the same conference. It is a beautiful, beautiful campus. The basilica inside the main building is just stunning. And it was the perfect setting where Arnold Palmer could be memorialized basically at home.
Yeah, and he was always around the La Trobe Country Club, always. You know, his dad, of course, was the PGA professional there. And, you know, it meant a lot, you know, maybe, and he always, I mean, it, and he passed away at Presbyterian in Pittsburgh, UPMC Presbyterian. And that's because he was at La Trobe at the time. He always came back. He always lived his summers there. In other words, it just tells you everything about, again, that this was one, quote, one of the guys.
Well, I think you might have seen Sunday night, Steve, on the Steelers Monday night broadcast. Antonio Brown had his Arnold's image somehow emblazoned on his football shoes.
Yeah.
Because he had gotten through, and as everyone knows, if you're a Steelers fan, the Steelers have their camp in Latrobe.
Yep.
And it's a beautiful field, a football stadium. I've been there a number of times, built by this Rooney family for St. Vincent, but also for their practice facility. And amazingly, some of the Steelers got to know Arnold Palmer. And I'm sure he was a Steelers fan.
Oh, he'd go over.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd go over. And I was talking to Jay one time, and Arnold Palmer offered Joe some golf lessons. And Joe didn't take it, and Joe said it's one of the things he regretted in his life.
Oh, I can believe it.
I said, I should have done that.
Arnold Palmer offers lessons?
You know Sue's from Latrobe, right?
She is a Western Pennsylvania girl.
Yes. In fact, my son Mike and daughter-in-law Mary Beth were married in the same church the Paternals were married in a couple of years ago. So, in Latrobe.
Yep, beautiful.
And, and so, it's just paying tribute to him. Today was the service, so I wanted to at least play that. Come on. I didn't want to do any bozo of the day or anything like that. And I'm sure at some point when the NFL takes a look at the shoes, they'll find them. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
It's interesting, the ESPN affiliate, radio affiliate in Fayetteville, North Carolina, has decided to stop broadcasting East Carolina football games because of the protests by the band at their last game, which I believe was Central Florida.
Yeah, down in Greenville on Saturday.
Yeah, several members of the band refused to play the national anthem, and others took a knee during the performance. And the chairman of the local affiliate there has said that they're not going to air their games any longer. He said, quote, "I'm proud of our country. I'm proud of our soldiers, especially our soldiers from Fort Bragg fighting for our country. So I've decided that ESPN Fayetteville will protest the protest."
The Board of Trustees down there, Steve, issued a very harsh rebuke also. The president of the college came out in some kind of mamby-pamby statement afterwards, kind of defending the students. It did not go over well with his bosses, the Board of Trustees.
Well, look, I made this statement last week, and there's no need to clarify it because it's everyone is within their right to protest. Everyone is. It's what makes this country great. If there's something you feel strongly about and you want to protest about it, freedom of speech and freedom of expression gives you the right to do that. At the same time, just because you protest, and you have the right to do it, others have the right to tell you that they don't agree with you either, because that's their right on freedom of expression and freedom of speech. You have the right to protest and explain what you're angry about, but at the same time, everyone else has the freedom of expression and the freedom of speech as well to agree with you or disagree with you. It just doesn't work one way. They protested. Wow, the whole world should be enlightened. Oh, you don't agree with it? And you don't agree with them? You're obviously not an enlightened person. Part of the beauty of this country is this. I completely respect your right to protest and your right of freedom of expression. But you have to understand something. everyone else also has the right to either agree with you and say, you know what, I see what you're saying, or they have the right to say, I disagree with you. I don't agree with what you're doing. Everybody has the same rights. And just because you're protesting, your rights don't supersede someone else's rights of expression and opinion. They may, you know, and their expression may be an opinion may be absolutely to agree with you, or they may disagree with you, but they have the right to express it too.
Well, I think absolutely,
and
I'm Steve. It's exactly right, and you know, two of the great civil protesters in history, Gandhi from India and Martin Luther King here in the United States.
That's who I thought you'd say.
Yep,
literally.
And they all, but they also said, if you're willing to engage in that kind of protest, then you must accept the consequences of your actions.
Right, and but again, at the same time, is that, you know, freedom of speech gives you the absolute right to protest. Freedom of speech gives you the absolute right of expression. But remember, the right of that doesn't exclusively go to you. Everyone else in this country has freedom of speech and freedom of expression. And in their expression and in their speech, they may absolutely agree with you. And there's also a segment that is well within its rights to absolutely disagree with you. That's the part of their freedom of speech and expression. And everybody falls into lockstep and go, awesome, move forward. Not everybody feels the same way about things. And, you know, if you're going to praise someone's right to protest, you also have to praise the rights of those who agree with the protest and also appraise the rights of those who disagree with it.
Well, I don't think this is a story that's reached its conclusion just yet down in East Carolina.
I don't think so either, but you know what's interesting is several of the Michigan football players evidently at the Penn State game protested on the sideline during the national anthem, and I was asked about it, and they said, what did you think when I saw that? And I said, well, we were told in the pregame there was an F-18 flyover, so I kept looking up at the sky. I never once looked at the sideline. I never saw it. So, well, but again, you have the right to agree with it, but you also have the right to disagree with it. That's called freedom of expression.
And we're Americans. We're allowed to do that kind of stuff.
Sure, absolutely. You don't have to agree with everything, and you don't have to disagree with everything. You're-